Hi, and welcome to Low Country Lowdown, the weekly podcast that brings internationals in the Netherlands up to speed on the Dutch news that matters. I'm Albert van der Woude, a Dutch investigative journalist, and every Friday morning I'll be running you through the news stories that are set to shape the country in the months to come. In today's episode, airing on the 7th of November, we'll discuss how the interim government coalition quietly killed new migrant worker protection plans. Also, we'll talk about weight loss drugs finally being covered by Dutch health insurance. As always, we've invited a token international who's here to represent all the hopes, fears, and general confusion of the average expat in the Netherlands. They're here to intervene and ask away as we're running through the news. Importantly, they get to use the Holland hotline, asking their most pressing question about Dutch society. This week, our esteemed guest is Christo. Welcome back, Christo.
I'm back.
Yeah, you are. This is your second or third time. You are an American national, as we've established, a U.S. national in previous episodes. Yeah. You've come here for what exactly? A better life, wasn't it?
That's right. That's
a better life. Okay. Mm-hmm. More important than your motivations for coming here is the question that you've brought along for this week. Can you tell me what it is?
Well, I've been hearing, you know, there's a lot of chatter in the U.S. right now with Mondani's win about socialism and social welfare and all of those things. And I just kind of got me thinking, when did the Netherlands and Europe in general become, I'm going to use the term, a welfare state? Mm-hmm. When did that happen?
Right. Well, we're going to get to that at the end of the show. Already a little clue is that what really helps is if you have your continent's largest natural gas reserve right below your soil. That's one of the key elements in this, but we'll get into the details afterwards. The caretaker government has quietly killed new legislation aimed at protecting low-paid migrant workers. Earlier this year, the Ministry for Social Affairs launched a plan to ban the practice of employment agencies housing their workers and in exchange withholding part of their pay. 5 years ago, a prominent and widely discussed report on the exploitation of migrant workers named exactly this practice as one of the top priorities for reducing the overwhelming precarity that many low-paid migrant workers face in the country. The fate of low-paid migrant workers, often from Central Europe, has been a topic of attention and concern across Dutch society for years. Now, the decision to kill these planned reforms to sort of reduce the precarity that these migrant workers are in has drawn a lot of criticism. The plan was launched earlier this year when the Ministry of Social Affairs was headed by a minister of the NSC party, a center-right party, which is now sort of gone, essentially. It gained zero seats in the election. After they left the coalition a couple of months ago, it was taken over, the seat or the ministry was taken over by the Liberal Conservatives. And the day after parliamentary elections, which is obviously when nobody's paying attention to any other news but the election results, the Liberal Conservatives, their minister, quietly announced that the reforms were off the table again. What's notable about this is that, firstly, this was reported by NRC, one of the big newspapers, on Sunday, where they said, wait a minute, hold up. The ministry announced this like pretty sort of serious change to their, you know, previously announced plan. They got in touch with the ministry. The ministry said, this is a change. However, we've consulted all the relevant parties, organizations, unions, any NGOs that are involved in migrant workers' rights. So that happened on Sunday, and then a couple of days later, all of those organizations said, actually, the ministry has never asked us for any input on this and took that decision single-handedly. The only organization involved in making this decision is the National Lobby Organization for Employment Agencies. So that already is a sort of relatively scathing indictment of the way in which this decision was made.
Do you think it was made that way? As in, why do you think that the politicians in this case are beholden to that one lobby and not to other interests?
Question, which quite naturally brings us to the second point, why this is such a contentious decision. The chief, the CEO of the biggest or one of the biggest employment agencies, was an important donor to the conservative, Liberal Conservative Party 2 years ago. Not just
wow,
him.
So it works really, it's really quite similar to.
Yeah, this is quite a, you don't see it that much, but this is like a very blatant example where suddenly, without any real discussion or open debate, a party's plans or a party's minister's decisions suddenly align with our most important donors. Because it's not only the CEO of Otto Workforce, which is one of the big work agencies, but also the CEO of, for example, Basic Fit, which is a huge chain of cheap gyms across the Netherlands who rely quite heavily on migrant workers for their cleaning, for example. They've also donated quite massively to the Liberal Conservative Party.
And did this minister... did they come out with some kind of a reason or justification for what they were doing? Like that it is it costing the state a lot of money to make these reforms? Or
they made relatively vague sort of explanations as to why this would be better, which were all countered.
Because they get some more donors.
Exactly. Yeah, that was probably the point it boiled down to. And what is odd about this is that, like I said, 5 years ago, there was a big report looking into the well-being of low-paid migrant workers in the Netherlands. And they found, they made 20 or 25 major recommendations in terms of policy change. And one of the top ones was exactly this, like untying or like disconnecting migrants, their housing from their pay. Because if you control where they live, you can say if you lose your job, you're gonna lose your house.
Employment agencies are hiring people with the stipulation that they live in their own in the employment agency's owned housing.
Well, I mean, the housing crisis is so widespread that if you come here, you don't really have a choice. And if your employment agency says, I can get you a job in a slaughterhouse or a distribution center, and also I have a charging room.
Whatever they want for that, probably.
Exactly. Yeah. So, for example, the CEO of Otto Workforce, he has changed, he quit his job, and now he is doing, he's started a new business in migrant housing. So it's a major business. Anyhow, this has led to quite a lot of strong criticism across the political spectrum, obviously, because it is just a very blatantly misaligned decision, to put it that way. What's important here is that the debate societally about low-paid migrant workers has been sort of steadily holding on to the same tune for years already, where everybody's saying we can't keep going on this way. We have hundreds of thousands of low-paid migrant workers, mostly from Central Europe, in the meat industry, mostly slaughterhouses. There is 10,000 folks working through employment agencies, generally at a minimum wage level, and often they're not allowed to register by whoever's housing them, which means that they can't apply for benefits, which means that actually, the whole idea of minimum wage here is that it's livable as long as you can also combine it with benefits. A lot of the people that work in slaughterhouses and elsewhere can't do that properly.
Yeah, it seems like it would be pretty obvious that you shouldn't be able to bring somebody into the country to work and then disallow them from registering for
And this is like a known tactic. Another one is saying, hey man, if you don't show up tomorrow, even if you're ill, I don't care, but I'm going to fire you on the spot, which is not allowed in the Netherlands. You're going to get kicked out of your house by the next evening, that's one of the things. Often suppression of health or of serious workplace related accidents, is also a major thing that's happening across most industries. So generally everybody knows it's a horrible position for these people, but it's just deemed impossible, at least in the last two coalitions, to effectively implement any of the recommendations that the...
Yeah, I guess that's what is confusing to me, because it seems like it doesn't seem like there are two hotly contested sides to this. It seems like there's one clear opinion that most people have, and then there's like a lobby group in, that are protecting the interests of the employment agencies. But I guess that just seems like such a small coalition or small group of people.
I mean, it does concern the group we're talking about. I mean, the question of what is a low paid migrant worker, exactly what's the definition of it is tricky. Generally, we think of people who work in greenhouses, people who work in a distribution center for, let's say, Bol.com or Albert Heijn or whatever, or in these slaughterhouses. There are hundreds of thousands of them, so obviously they're important to the economy. However, they prop up industries, or don't prop up, but they work in industries which are actually, they have a very low added value for the Dutch economy. So if you compare it to, let's say, the Dutch chip industry or whatever, any more high-tech industry, this is an industry that which requires the constant provision of hundreds of thousands of workers who are then exploited for relatively low profit margins and then also very little actual benefit to the Dutch economy. So to be honest, as you're saying, it's kind of odd politically, economically, societally that this hasn't been combated properly before. However, the VVD, the Liberal Conservatives, have been in coalition for years now, and they've been known to be relatively beholden right. to this particular subset of major companies in the Netherlands.
And not big fans of immigrants in general.
This is the odd part. They protect the employment agencies who import huge amounts of labor immigrants and required to, like, they have to keep doing this, otherwise they collapse, these companies, but they also donate to anti-immigration parties.
Right. But I guess their policy is, if we're going to bring in immigrants, let's treat them poorly.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Let's just make sure that they were not so forced to treat them humanely. Big thing here is that obviously we had an election last week or the week before, so we don't have a new parliament yet. It's going to be installed next week or the week after. That means that this whole affair won't be discussed until then. This episode is brought to you by Vacuri, the Amsterdam-based coffee business with more than a dozen stores across the country, offering specialty grade coffee for the best price around. Vacuri believes that good coffee shouldn't come at the cost of the planet or the people who grow it. That's why they focus on regenerative agriculture, supporting farmers with training and incentives to improve soil health and biodiversity. Step into one of Vacuri's cafes for a cappuccino, a cold brew to go, or a bag of beans that actually tells you where it came from and who grew it. Or dig in online at vacuri.com. We're also proud to partner with the Amsterdam International Community Foundation, the go-to hub for internationals in Amsterdam, helping people connect, settle, and thrive. When you move to a new country, there's a lot to figure out: making friends, finding cool events, and discovering local culture. AIC helps you out with all of this, setting up social events, workshops, and language exchanges to make you feel right at home. So if you're new in town or looking for a community to join, check out aicexpat.nl. In other news, in a change of policy, the National Healthcare Institute has indicated that it will include weight loss drugs in the National Health Insurance Package. Every Dutch citizen is legally obliged to buy this so-called basic insurance package, which up until now did not include compensation for weight loss drugs like Wegovy and Mounjaro, which are more or less Ozempic-like types of drugs. Importantly, the basic insurance package will only cover the weight loss drugs in very specific medical cases. Only people with a BMI over 35 or people with quote-unquote regular obesity who suffer from sort of secondary health issues because of it. Only those two groups will sort of qualify for these drugs to be covered by their health insurance.
But aren't those pretty much all of the groups that you would prescribe those drugs to?
Like, the regularly obese aren't going to qualify if they don't actually suffer any secondary health issues from it. Sleep apnea,
heart disease, or
heart disease or whatever. Yeah. Importantly, you have those two groups. Even if you're in one of those two groups, you're still going to have to go to a specialist to have it prescribed. You know, they sort of gatekeep whether or not you are actually going to make it through or not. The total group that this could possibly apply to is about 1 million people. It's more than it used to be. So in the mid 80s, roughly, we had an obesity rate of roughly 5%. Now it's 15. So it's tripled in that period. In total, if all 1 million people who technically qualify for these weight loss drugs actually got it, it would cost the Dutch state 4 billion a year, which is a relatively serious sum of money.
Yeah. But has there been some kind of cost benefit analysis about how much it costs the Dutch state to treat these people who have, who maybe don't have chronic, heart disease right now, but are going to develop it because they're chronically obese? And then
That's the,
you have to be
exactly.
Giving
I mean,
them.
This is the National Healthcare Institute, which is the, you know, the central national institute, which decides which things are and aren't covered by basic insurance. They say there's just a couple of variables that we're not sure about. One of them being, what are the exact long-term health cost savings that we get out of this? It's just very hard to say, also because you don't know how many people are actually
going to apply
for it.
They've also only been on the market for so long.
Exactly.
As well.
And another one they're saying is, like, we actually don't really know what the long-term health effects are of these drugs. So going all out is something they've been hesitant about.
But then they're going all out, it sounds like. If they're putting it in the basic plan, I mean, I guess they're not...
They're putting it in the basic plan for
giving
people.
It to everybody.
But. Exactly, exactly. And they... You could buy these drugs already in the past year, 2 years, and something like 10 or maybe 20,000 people actually did so in the Netherlands. And that's, I think, that was roughly the figures that I last read about for.
Are they very expensive? I don't actually know.
So if you, the National Health Insurance Institute or National Health Institute stated that it would be roughly 300 to 350 euros a month for the average user.
Uninsured, like for them to pay for.
Yeah, exactly, through the insurance. The issue here is that, and that's something...
That's,
you know,
a lot.
As a US citizen, you must know that drugs work great, but as soon as you quit them, you just gain weight again, for in most cases. And that's the issue here, that it's not like a short, you know, term remedial cure that then has long-lasting effects. Yeah. Often people who... As soon as they start using it, they're going to have to stick to it for quite a while.
It sounds like a good business for those companies.
Exactly. Yeah. Well, I mean, they must be happy with this, the current policy shift. But so this is going to be a preliminary measure. And obviously, in the next couple of years, they're going to readjust it as they get more data from it. Interestingly, you know, obesity is a huge issue in Dutch society health-wise, the other one being smoking, both having been targeted for decades already, or at least a good while. Smoking going down significantly, but obesity going up massively. Still, there are only three countries in Europe which have a lower obesity rate, being Italy, Romania, and Bulgaria. All the other ones have a higher, and in some cases, far higher obesity rate. So we're doing relatively okay.
Yeah,
but
you
still,
bike everywhere.
We bike everywhere, yeah. And we just eat garbage food, which somehow, you know, makes us... If it was any tastier, we'd be in trouble.
Look at the Italians. They're eating
That's
a lot
true.
Of pasta.
Yeah, yeah. This is the big mystery. This is, like, genuinely inexplicable to me. Interestingly, this sort of policy shift comes a week after Eli Lilly, which is a major pharmaceutical company, announced that they're going to open up a drug production plant in Katwijk, which is not far from Amsterdam. I think it's in west of the country. They're going to be producing their type of obesity reducing drug as well. So anybody who is, you know, qualifies is going to be able to just get it straight from the source just a few miles down the road.
Do you think that had something to do with the policy change?
No. This is naive. They wouldn't have known, probably.
Yeah.
Three quick headlines that also figured in the news this week. Work has started on forming a new Dutch coalition government, with the former minister and railway chief Wouter Koolmees being appointed scout or verkenner to explore the possible formation constellations. He's going to have to present his findings by November 11th. In other news, population growth in the Netherlands has dropped slightly as fewer refugees, Indian nationals, and EU citizens moved into the country in the first 9 months of the year. Even with declining immigration rate, the increase in population is still entirely due to newcomers in the Netherlands, as the birth rate in the country is still negative and has been for ages. And lastly, the national rail operator Nederlandse Spoorwegen, NS, plans to raise train fares again by over 6% from January 1st next year.
Seriously?
Again, yeah.
What?
It's the one thing they love more than anything, these people. It gets them out of bed. They are attributing the hike to inflation, delayed cost pressures, and investments in new trains. The total price hike is lower than they previously feared, but still significant, and probably is going to batter the already low sort of travel rates with the Dutch railways.
It's absurd to me that it's actually cheaper to drive a car,
which is already super expensive. Yeah.
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 Yeah. Even with gas, the cost that it is, which is very high here, it's still cheaper to drive a car than it is to take a train.
What we're going to do is we're going to find Railway Chief Walter Kolm has his home address for you and send you to sort it out, because I can't be bothered. We're going to, yeah.
All right, I'll find something to do there.
The people thank you, Christo. And now for the final section of the show, the Holland Hotline. Christo, you get to ask your question. Can you remind me what it is?
Yeah, I'm just wondering about the origins of the European, or the Dutch in particular, welfare state.
Right.
Like, when did it start? How did it start?
Okay. Yeah. The sort of quick and simple answer here is that the first signs came in like the late 19th century, when like very basic legislation like a ban on child labor and some sort of very provisional protections for for poverty at old age were implemented. And it didn't really kick off until 1900. And that's when you see laws being passed to improve housing for the poor, providing basic forms of work-related accident insurance, and introducing mandatory primary education for kids. So that's like 1900 to maybe 1930. That's when all those super fundamental, you know, workplace and life protection things come into place. And the real quote unquote welfare state as we know it, with state pensions for the elderly, unemployment and disability benefits and stuff, didn't materialize until the 1950s and 60s. So what happened
That's then still pretty long ago.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, like, also in the interwar era, economically most countries weren't doing too great. And two things play into this for the Netherlands particularly. Depolarization. So religion started playing a smaller and smaller role, which, you know, churches used to provide care for the sick and the poor and the old. So more and more people were looking to the state to do that. At the same time, they found Europe's largest gas field right below Groningen, the province in the north, which produced 400 billion euros worth of gas. And that mostly financed the huge expansion of the welfare state. And then as a population...
Because that was that... Did the government itself make money off of that? I mean...
Yeah. It was a joint venture with Shell, and it was done quite poorly. You have a Norwegian oil fund, and they run it really, really well. And they always point at the Dutch for explaining how you shouldn't handle the sudden acquisition of huge natural resources. But that's another one.
Yeah, another podcast.
So welfare state expanded from the 60s onwards, and then kind of got pared down from the 80s again. The successive economic crises caused huge unemployment. 10% of people were out of work at some point. So the economy was doing very poorly. Everybody was getting massive unemployment benefits. And then they pared down on wages, on minimum wage, on unemployment benefits. And that kind of like, you know, slow reduction, like decade to decade reduction of the size of the welfare state is something that's still going on. So we're paying more for health insurance now. Social housing has been really slashed quite heavily over the past decades. And that kind of segues nicely into what around the austerity economic crisis years was first introduced as the participation society. So less a welfare state and more a society aimed at everybody participating and doing their bit for society, which was a sort of cheerful chant, which was supposed to accompany the dreadful sort of misery coming with major austerity. So that's kind of the very, very quick overlook, where the fundamentals, like basic labor and life protection and protections for the elderly, for the sick, and for kids, came up between 1880 and 1930, and then the proper expansion wasn't until like just after the war, and it wasn't tenable for that long. And since then, we've been scaling it back continuously, ambitiously.
Yeah. It still seems pretty robust. I mean, as an American, it,
for sure. Yeah. I mean,
I'm impressed by it.
Well, with that question answered correctly, I think we've reached the end of today's episode, and we're going to be back next week on Friday morning, obviously, with next week's news. In the meantime, feel free to get in touch with us if you have any questions or comments. Visit lowdown.nl to find our socials and contact information. Don't forget to subscribe to our channels, and of course, tell your pals and colleagues about Low Country Lowdown. That's it for now. Thanks for listening, and we'll be back Friday morning.